This is a session on women writers, and we're working today with poems about old age. My name is Rinda West. One of the interesting things in looking at poems by women about aging is that so much of the way our culture defines women is in terms of physical appearance. That even in poetry and song, it's the beautiful woman and the brave man, the lovely princess, whom the writers have chosen to feature. So for women, as they age, the problem then is often one of identity. Who am I if I'm no longer beautiful? How do I cope with this process which is happening to me, which is beyond my control, and which often makes me feel as though I am no longer of value to the culture that I live in? I'm going to start with a poem by a woman called Maria Fiamengo, who is Polish, and it's called In Praise of Old Women, and it begins by addressing a contemporary Polish poet named Tadeusz. Does anyone know how to pronounce that? Well, I'm going to pronounce it Tadeusz, and I have no idea if that's right, but I'm pretty sure that the SZ in Polish is often pronounced sh. So I'm going to pronounce it Tadeusz, but you'll know that that's my interpretation, okay? And his surname is Rozewicz, which I am going to pronounce Rozewicz. That may not be correct, but we're going to call him Tadeusz Rozewicz. Rish. Okay? What I like to do with the poetry is read the poem through once so that you get a sense of the whole poem, and then read it through again so that you can hear it, and then begin to talk about our responses to it. And as I do that, we can go back to parts of it or read it through again and again. Most people tell me that they're a little intimidated by poetry, that it's not something they read ordinarily. Most of us read newspapers or magazines or stories or novels, so we're familiar with the feel of prose. It's what we talk. But poetry feels a little distant to us, a little alienating. And I hope that by listening to poems rather than having to look at them, and by responding to the images, the verbal pictures and the sounds of the words, that you'll be able to simply enjoy it and not feel like you're in an English class and you have to find the symbolism, because you don't. So, In Praise of Old Women. Yes, Tadeusz Rozewicz, I too prefer old women. They bend over graves with flowers. They wash the limbs of the dead. They count the beads of their rosaries. They commit no murders. They give advice or tell fortunes. They endure. In Poland, in Russia, in Asia, in the Balkans, I see them shawled, kerchiefed, bent-backed, work-wrinkled. But Tadeusz, have you been to America? Where we have no old women, no stara babas, no haggard madonnas. Everyone, Tadeusz, is young in America, especially the women with coiffed blue hair which gleams like the steel of jets in the daytime sky. Smooth-skinned at 60, second debuts at 50, renaissance, they never grow old in America. And we have in America literate, sexually liberated women who wouldn't touch a corpse, who confuse lechery with love, not out of viciousness, but boringly out of confusion, neurosis, identity crises. Tadeusz, I go to the cemetery with my mother, one of us stoically old, the other aging, and I tell you, Tadeusz, I will grow old in America. I will have no second debut. I will raise my son on old battles, Kosovo, Neretva, Thermopylae, Stalingrad, and Britain, and I will wrinkle adamantly in America. I will put salt in the soup, and I will offer bread and wine to my friends, and I will stubbornly praise old women until their thin, taut skins glow like icons ascending on escalators, like Buddhas descending in subways. And I will liberate all women to be old in America, because the highest manifestation of Hagia Sophia is old and a woman. Hagia Sophia, you probably know, means holy wisdom. Sophia is wisdom and Hagia is holy. So the end of that, the highest manifestation of holy wisdom is old and a woman. Okay, now you have a sense of the shape of the poem. Let me read it to you again so that you can hear how she's moving it around inside. In praise of old women. Yes, Tadeusz Rozewicz, I too prefer old women. They bend over graves with flowers. They wash the limbs of the dead. They count the beads of their rosaries. They commit no murders. They give advice or tell fortunes. They endure. In Poland, in Russia, in Asia, in the Balkans, I see them shawled, kerchiefed, bent back, work wrinkled. But Tadeusz, have you been in America? Where we have no old women, no stara babas, no haggard madonnas. Everyone, Tadeusz, is young in America, especially the women with coiffed blue hair which gleams like the steel of jets in the daytime sky. Smooth-skinned at 60, second debuts at 50, renascent. They never grow old in America. And we have in America literate, sexually liberated women who wouldn't touch a corpse, who confuse lechery with love, not out of viciousness, but boringly, out of confusion, neurosis, identity crisis. Tadeusz, I go to the cemetery with my mother, one of us stoically old, the other aging. And I tell you, Tadeusz, I will grow old in America. I will have no second debut. I will raise my son on old battles, Kosovo, Neretva, Thermopylae, Stalingrad in Britain, and I will wrinkle adamantly in America. I will put salt in the soup, and I will offer bread and wine to my friends, and I will stubbornly praise old women until their thin, taut skins glow like icons ascending on escalators, like Buddhas descending in subways, and I will liberate all women to be old in America, because the highest manifestation of Hagia Sophia is old and a woman.
Can you read that ending again?
From where?
And I will liberate.
Ah. And I will liberate all women to be old in America, because the highest manifestation of Hagia Sophia is old and a woman.
Could you explain Hagia Sophia again?
Sure. Okay, Sophia is the Greek word for wisdom.
Okay.
And Hagia is holy. So the highest manifestation of holy wisdom.
And Sophia, could you read the ending from I Will Liberate?
Sure.
One more time?
And I will liberate all women to be old in America. Because the highest manifestation of Hagia Sophia is old and a woman.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, and Sophia is a woman. Feminine term. So, what do you hear?
An interesting contrast.
Mm-hmm. It is an interesting contrast, isn't it?
Is the poet an immigrant into America?
I will read you what the book says about her. Longtime resident of Vancouver, Canada, Maria Fiamengo has published volumes of poetry since 1958, including In Praise of Old Women and North of the Cold Star. Her works have also been widely anthologized, and she's acquired both a national and international reputation. So I was wrong. She's not an immigrant. She's Canadian. So we have a poem built around a contrast. What's feelings? Or questions, or images, or ideas, does it arouse in you?
The thing that, you know, we see these things from our own experiences. And 3 years ago, our family lived in England, and we lived in a village where there were really no Americans at all. And after a while, you begin, some funny things happen, and you don't hear people speaking with an American accent, and you don't see Americans. You try to sort of absorb in quite naturally. And when we'd go to London or to a city where I could see Americans, I could tell they were Americans before I ever heard them speak. And it was always sort of a thing, if we were touring someplace, our family would say, do you think they're Americans? It wasn't always their clothing, but we could spot Americans, and it was almost always the women, and not only older women, but younger women too. And Americans look different from Europeans. I mean, that contrast, I saw that, and I guess a lot of the people that travel in England are the affluent Americans, but our affluence has made it so we can have all sorts of collagen injections and cosmetic surgery and certain things with our hair and makeup and clothing. And American women look different than women in other parts of the world. I'm not placing any values or anything, but we could spot them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
Let's take a look at the contrast. Just see what it is that she's saying here. I'm going to read the stanza that says, that begins, we have in America. Remember, she said before, they never grow old in America. Actually, I guess I need to read the one. Everyone, Thaddeus, is young in America, especially the women, with coiffed blue hair, which gleams like the steel of jets in the daytime sky. Smooth-skinned at 60, second debuts at 50, renascent, they never grow old in America. And we have in America literate, sexually liberated women who wouldn't touch a corpse, who confuse lechery with love, not out of viciousness, but boringly out of confusion, neurosis, identity crisis. What do you hear in those images?
Well, at the beginning, you know, talks about older women going to the grave, and it almost seems like these aren't American women with that image, that they have a purpose, that they have, when they're old, they have a purpose. There's something that they do, and it's beautiful. It's, you know, when they have wrinkled skin and that kind of thing, it's a beautiful thing. And in America, it's like that last line is like identity crisis, trying to figure out who you are, what your purpose is after you reach a certain age. And it's like maybe there's that feeling of not having a purpose, that you need to look beautiful and young in order to be someone or have an identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's real nice, Dar. That sense that there's a sense about these women that they have no purpose. They're not valued, perhaps.
There's a nice maybe six images in the beginning about these Eastern European women, all of which have to do with something beyond life, either mystical or death or a sort of tuned-inness with continuation of life beyond that barrier of the literal level of our life. I mean, the first image is flowers at the grave, the second one is tent washing the limbs of the dead,
The beads of their rosaries?
Counting the beads of their rosaries. So it's a faith image, which is not on the literal level. And then there's being fortune tellers or dispensing wisdom, both of which kind of intermix. It's a kind of witch, woman as witch, knowing more than just the literal level of what you know, seeing into the heart of things. All of that stuff is so enriching and natural, and to do with the physicalness of life as well as the metaphorical or mystical part of life.
Mm-hmm. And that's really in sharp contrast to the stanza about American women, isn't it?
Yeah.
The description of the older American woman sounds almost like a magazine ad. You know, your skin, yes. Second debut. You can almost hear skin cream called that.
Right, right.
And, you know, and I think there's a lot of pressure, you know, to concentrate on that aspect. Yeah. Not growing older, but getting better. But better what? Better looking.
Right, right, exactly. That's a very nice observation, that it sounds like a magazine advertisement. I'm sure that's a deliberate effort.
And the thing is, we've bought into it because we don't honor ourselves as we grow older, and honoring the fact that I am wiser, I am experienced, and that I have something to share. In the same sense, because I don't honor it in myself, then in that it doesn't command, not necessarily command, but the respect or the encouragement for someone to seek out my wisdom. Because I don't honor it myself, it will not be honored by anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a,
go ahead.
this isn't, you know, in the poem, but if a woman is to go back and pick up a career a second time around by the advice, you know, get rid of the gray and all that good kind of stuff. And in America, we look at a man with gray hair and we think, and he doesn't go through all of these various techniques of appearing younger, and we look at him and we think he's a dignified gentleman. And yeah. For a woman, we just...
The old double standards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone feel that that's changing?
Yes.
Yeah, more men are doing it now, too.
That we're going against the natural process of time. We're fighting it, all of us.
Do you think it's changing in the respect that, that we're becoming more respectful of the aging process?
No, that we aren't. I think what's changing, before it was more acceptable for men to age more so than women. And I wonder if some of that is maybe just biological, that women lose the power to have children, whereas men still can produce children. And so some of that purpose. But now I think that it's more, it's changed that both women and men fear growing old because our society has uplifted youth so much that it seems negative to age. Mm-hmm.
It seems almost as though you've done something in bad taste. and you don't want people to know that. Yes. Did you have...
talking about feelings, my gut level feeling is that this poem puts me on the defensive. Mm-hmm. Immediately it does.
Mm-hmm.
Without thinking hard. But I've been thinking about, well, my hair is naturally this color. I don't have any bluing or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about my mother lived to be 93 and she was still dyeing her hair. And quite energetic and alert and so forth. And then my grandmother came from Norway, and she always pulled her hair back tightly in a tight bun. And they were both outgoing women and helpful to other people and compassionate. And I was thinking, I don't admire or respect my mother any less than my grandmother. They were so much alike, and I feel the same towards them. And I guess that's, I was trying to think about why I felt negative towards this poem, and then I just thought about my grandmother and my mother were different.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I respected them just as much. And secondly, I thought of, I think many of you have been in Vigeland Park in Norway, and my cousin was with me, and she's lived in Norway all her life, and I asked her which statue she liked the best, and she said she liked the one of the two old women. And I was so surprised. They're pretty, you know, they're pretty ugly, and the skin is hanging, and Vigeland has gotten wrinkles into them. He's done a wonderful job to show old age. And I was thinking my favorite one was, I was at the other end. My favorite one was that little old 2-3-year-old boy who is so angry. He's jumping, both feet are off the ground. He's so angry. But her favorite was the old woman. And I thought a lot about that guy. I couldn't help but admire her for feeling that way. Because she's a nurse, and this was very real to her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you shared that about feeling defensive when you heard this, because I wondered if that wouldn't be some people's response. And I see you're shaking your head, but you also had that feeling. What, can you talk about that at all?
Well, I don't know. I just think there's nothing wrong with wanting to look all right. I don't think that, why not? I think you can still be respected as an older person and valued for your wisdom that you've attained through the years and still, you know, try to look all right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
was doing some research on the area of going into retirement and our attitudes toward it recently, and I came across a sentence that said something to this effect, that the senior grouping of people, both sexes obviously, tend to regard their appearance as attractive to a greater degree than any other age group.
Isn't that interesting?
The senior?
Yeah.
The senior group, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? That's very suggestive that people have a high self-esteem, because I think your regard for your appearance is correlated to your self-esteem. One of the things that I think you need to do in thinking about this poem is to, and it's partly it's come out in our discussion, is to sort out what are the values of the dominant culture in America that it tries to impose on us, and what are the values which we affirm. What do we take from that and what do we reject from that? And as I read these smooth-skinned at 60, second debuts at 50, like you, I hear advertisements telling us how we ought to be. And part of my response to that is my response to the entire advertising industry, which makes millions and millions of dollars by telling women that our primary source of self-esteem is in our appearance. And since there isn't a woman alive who doesn't think that she falls short of the airbrushed people without pores that appear in the national magazines, then they make their money by convincing us that there's something wrong with us and getting us to buy products. And if you watch advertising, you'll see that in 30 seconds or 60 seconds or even in a magazine page, there's a little scenario which is arouse insecurity and then persuade the person that the insecurity can be overcome with the use of the advertised product. So I think the poem, in part, is looking at the way American culture values youth, values beauty, and in women, and I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that our value stops when we no longer are able to have children. Maybe it was you, Margaret. And I think that's true, that women are valued insofar as we reproduce. And then you talked about if you do go and get a career, they tell you that you should get the gray out of your hair and so on. But we still think of a career in many, many ways in our culture. You don't think of a woman as having value as a woman in her wisdom. And that's one of the things that I like about the first stanza of this. Yeah.
It brings to mind, I have a 16-year-old granddaughter, and she was at my home one day. It was my birthday. And they were talking about my age, and I said, yes, and of course then Grandma gets wrinkles. And the next time she came to my house, she brought me a sign. And it said, wrinkles merely indicate where smiles have been.
Well, that's nice.
And I thought, she saw that the wrinkle didn't mean you were any less. And she said, I thought this was meant for you, Grandma.
That's nice. That's very nice.
But the youth, I don't think of aging as bad.
Do women in America go through a real denial and grief when they come to a period where they feel like they're, so to speak, over the hump? I mean, we talked about our reactions to the poem, and I wonder if a lot of women go through the same thing that maybe I feel it. At this age, I don't want to grow old. You know, you all of a sudden you stop and you realize reality tells you where you are on the timetable, and your first reaction is denial, and I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I still want to be able to hike 9 miles and not have my knees hurt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me that there is a grieving that's part of the process of loss.
And maybe we're kind of at the adolescence of old age, some of us. I mean, that's what I call it. We act like teenagers. I mean, we're not really acting like teenagers, but we go through a period like teenagers. We kind of flop around and act like young people, do goofy things, and we really will not accept where we are. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I feel as though I am more able to weed my garden of extraneous stuff mm-hmm. that I don't want in
yeah.
my life. I'm much more clear about what I will put up with and what I won't.
Yeah, and I feel
I'm more forceful about being clear about my desires or needs, even doing business with someone on the telephone or something. I'm more clear. I can't be pushed around.
I admit to that.
Yeah. One of the things that I, for myself, is I think about who I was at 20 and who I was at 40. What am I going to be like at 80? I think it's going to be wild. Looking at that as a continuous growth, of not a downhill, but a continuous growth.
And when I see what my college students go through, the 20-year-olds, people more than half my age, I'm 44 and they're 20. I feel sorry for them. I'm glad I'm not there. I mean, it's such a hard time of life, and it's so much easier to be 44 than 20.
We feel sorry for these people.
The interest are going to have some miserable years. But you know, one thing that I've discovered, the more I'm around people of all ages, I discover we all have the same needs. It's just, you know, I thought that once I got to a certain age that I was going to have my life all together, you know. And I, you know, I meet people who are older than I am at various stages of life, and they're still trying to think of how they're getting their life together. And, or the same kind of needs and desires that I have, you know, I see that they have those same things too. I see that in my parents, you know. Instead of just seeing them as parents, I'm going, you know, my mom could really be a lonely person too sometimes and have those same needs and desires that I have. You know, so that's been really neat for me to see that.
It's one of the nice things about Holden, isn't it, that you've got this wonderful age spread of everybody from infants to people in their 70s and 80s, and yet we're all in community. We all have much in common.
I was just going to say, one of my very dearest friends is an 87-year-old woman that literally runs circles around me. She brings new meaning to growing old. And I've told her she has been such an inspiration in my life. She is just dynamite, and she just keeps getting better. Mm-hmm. I just can't, and I think each one of us know an elderly person who is so fantastic. I emulate her. She's much better than I am as her attitude toward life, and she's fun to be around, and she is not without things that happen in the natural aging process. And she's had arthritis, and she's had some health problems. But she is the most wonderful person. I just adore her. She's one of the favorite people I've ever met. And I think if you know someone like that, it makes growing old easier.
My mother's 87, and she doesn't run rings around me. She's got arthritis, and she has trouble climbing stairs, and she has trouble walking, and she's a small person. She's smaller than I am. And she's just moved into a retirement home because she didn't want to have to change the fluorescent lights anymore. And she didn't want to have to worry about repairing the dishwasher. You know, all of those sorts of things. And they provide her with meals and stuff like that. But for me, and she's moved to Chicago where I live from Florida. So that's wonderful for me because I get to be with her more often. But her frailty frightens me. Because I have so much of my pleasure invested in hiking and running and being active. And you know, I know she's 42 years older than I am, so I have a good number of years to continue to be strong, but I'm also confronted in her in the gradual enfeeblement of our physical frame. And if it doesn't sound too selfish, I'm glad I am, in the sense that I think that can help me to understand the necessity of developing the spiritual and the emotional and the richness that can allow one at the end part of life to bend over graves with flowers, to wash the limbs of the dead, to count the beads of their rosaries, to give advice or tell fortunes, because you've lived through a lot and not denied, you know, and not invested so heavily in appearance.
And the worrying lines in that poem about American women are the lines that say that we have only in touch with ourselves physically, sexually, if we're going to be sexually reincarnated, but we can't deal with death.
Yeah.
And that would be something that we would have to think about in our own lives, to be comfortable moving across that line, and because it happens more and more to our friends as we get older.
Yeah. Go ahead, please.
I guess it's one of the ways that I, you know, I told you that I felt it just
right away made me feel defensive. And the things, and I'm thinking about the things she says of these older ladies in the other country do, and I was thinking about my friend who's a little older and how much she does things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about when my son-in-law's mother died, his sister, who was in her 20s, washed her and bathed her and got her all ready for the funeral. And so I'm thinking, it isn't only those older women over there.
Yeah.
Those same women are here.
Yeah, right.
Those ones are doing those things.
Right, and I think that there's a legitimate defensiveness that this poem can provoke, in the sense that her image of American women is a commercial image of American women, so that what she's unhappy about is that commercial image and not the reality of many, many women. And what's sad is not the reality of women, except insofar as we do buy into that commercial image, except insofar. And I do not believe that it's possible to live in America and escape the influence of that commercial image. I think that it gets to us. That's why they spend so much money on it, because they know it works. And so it's a matter of continuously saying to yourself, uh-oh, there I am again, feeling like I want to be like this character in the commercial, and I don't have to be that way. And building communities which support us not to buy into those values. There was the lady in the back wanted to say something.
Well, I was just, this has maybe nothing to do, but I found that this last year when I turned 50, that at that point I was really conscious of my age. Through those other years, birthdays just never bothered me, but all of a sudden coming in touch with 50, it wasn't an easy time.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself even going back and asking my mother how she felt at 50. And so she sent me a bumper sticker that said something about over the hill, but had teased me a little bit about it. But that was a hard time. I think now I can face the next one with a little more ease.
And it's hard to sort out what is a natural process of grieving that one's life is expectancy is getting shorter, and what is the effect of the culture which says you're not valuable because you're not 26.
I think that's the only bad thing about it, is that your life expectancy is growing shorter, and because if you enjoy life and you're having a wonderful time in life, that's the only thing. A growing older is great. I think my life now, you'd be surprised how happy it is. Because you don't have a lot of cares that you did, and I didn't mind having the cares, but it's really great not to have to worry about your kids, to eat when you want to eat, do what you want to do. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't feel any different inside. You don't feel any different.
Mm-hmm.
Your emotions are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, that it's not going to last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We enjoy retirement. My husband will tell you more about it.
Well, I think the sense of adventure that we enjoy is, I want to underline what she said, it's so true. I can't imagine exchanging our joy now for anything earlier. I certainly wouldn't want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
But we are, as someone has said, not homesteaders who sit and stay put.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're pioneers. There's so much out there.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the library and we look at the new bookshelf and explore some new area. We've been at 10 elder hostels.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful mind-boggling, just got back in BC. I've been in 30 countries leading tours, perhaps, led 10 tours overseas and elsewhere. We have an exciting time, but I think it's a matter of attitude more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I pity the what do you call them, couch potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't budge. It's sad.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my friends look at us as if we're crazy, out of our heads. I feel sorry for them.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get them to come along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you do if you don't have the money, don't think you're going to have the money?
Don't worry about it. The Lord has fed us every day until this moment.
My husband is 10 years older than I am, and he talks about retirement. I just, dig my heels in and throw my hands up, and he says early retirement, and then just, I just feel like, oh, I don't want to. And I guess, too, for me, it's personal. But one of the most satisfying times of my life was when my family was with me and around me. We have a daughter. And looking back over it, that was the time life went along so fast that you didn't have time to do a lot of evaluating. There was a lot of hardship, too. You know, you couldn't travel, you couldn't do some of the things. But it was a very satisfying time in my life. And I think maybe sometimes women grieve over that because they're so absorbed in family life. And I know you're not supposed to find your identity in you know, only in your families, but I think for some women that really has become an all-absorbing time.
I'm coming to see more and more how grandparenting can be a real deal. Because you get to have them when they're cute, and then you get to give them back when they're cranky.
Something, I was just saying this to Kevin and Rachel. I would be willing to guess that this man who has such a positive attitude and is not a couch potato probably wasn't one when he was 15 either. And I think we need to be thinking about how we're going to prepare for that in our attitude now while we are younger. So we can grow old gracefully and enjoy life like you are. And you're an inspiration to us. There are kids at 15 who do not have an adventurous spirit at all. And I think it completely crosses age barriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right.
If it's all right with you, I'd like to just bring the discussion back for a moment to something in the poem which we've touched on and then moved from. And I think it's interesting to raise again, and that has to do with the sense in the very beginning and the very end of the poem that the women she's writing about are really old women, that this is not active people in their 70s that she's writing about. These are, and I'll read you the very end of it again, "I will put salt in the soup, and I will offer bread and wine to my friends, and I will stubbornly praise old women until their thin, taut skins glow like icons ascending on escalators, like Buddhas descending in subways. And I will liberate all women to be old in America, because the highest manifestation of Hagia Sophia is old and a woman." And I think that what she's getting at there is that as we age and approach death, we potentially can move into an area of understanding and wisdom which is different from the energy of youth and exploration necessarily is something that you were saying before, Ingrid, that's almost a bridge between the living and what's beyond, between our physical frame and some kind of spiritual level. I love the line, "their thin, taut skins glow like icons," and she capitalizes I with the Russian I-K-O-N, she spells it, you know, the Russian icons in the Orthodox Church. But then she has the icons ascending on escalators, which is nice, in partly in that she's taking old women and making them almost translucent in their skin, glowing like religious figures, like icons, but she has them on escalators, which is a sort of real ordinary kind of term, and you picture them in the city so that you have this sense of the holy penetrating into the mundane, but also ascending. But ascending on escalators. I mean, it's a very nice sort of homey image. And then like Buddhas descending in subways, so that the age is transforming the people from what we are now into something reverent, we can reverence, and that what we are reverencing is the wisdom of all of those years, the wisdom of being closer to death than other people are, closer to mysteries, closer to the spiritual perhaps. And here we are in a Christian community away from the stress and grime and crime and pressure of our ordinary lives, where we have a freedom to explore spiritual issues and to affirm those values. And yet when we go back into the city where we'll be ascending on escalators and descending like Buddhas, how easy it is sometimes
to let that sense of the rich value of our spiritual life be eroded by having to go to the dry cleaners and, you know, standing in line at the post office and battling your way through traffic and just dealing with all of the dailiness of daily life. So I think that it's really lovely that we have available to us poetry, which we can come to and look at again, which helps us to regroup our own values, in a sense, to regroup and remind, remember and refresh, so that we can resist the imposition of whatever it was, smooth-skinned at 60, second debuts at 50. Would you like to hear another poem?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, good. This is a short one which won't require much discussion, but is just sort of fun. It's by Sandra Hockman. It's called Postscript, and the date on it is 1969. Hockman was born in 36. I gave my life to learning how to live. Now that I have organized it all, now that I have finally found out how to keep my clothes in order, when to wash and when to sew, how to control my glands and sexual impulses, how to raise a family, which friends to get rid of and which to be loyal to, who is phony and who is true, how to get rid of ambition and how to be thrifty, now that I have finally learned how to be closer to the nude and secret silence, my life is just about over. Would you like to hear that one more time so that you can enjoy the images? I gave my life to learning how to live. Now that I have organized it all, now that I have finally found out how to keep my clothes in order, when to wash and when to sew, how to control my glands and sexual impulses, how to raise a family, which friends to get rid of and which to be loyal to, who is phony and who is true, how to get rid of ambition and how to be thrifty, now that I have finally learned how to be closer to the nude and secret silence, my life is just about over.
That's a real common thing. We have a sort of, we're sending our first one off to college, and we sort of have a standing joke. We said, boy, wouldn't it be fun to, we really blew it when we went to college. Wouldn't it be fun to go back to be 18, but have your same 45-year-old mind?
Yeah, but try and tell your 18-year-old all of your wisdom and see how much good it will do you.
It reminds me of the John Lennon quote that we have someplace in our house that a friend gave to us. It's very simple. It's, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say live every day of your life.
I gave my life to learning how to live.
I gave my life to learning how to live.
There was a quote the other night in Vespas, I don't know if I'm reading it right, but it's, to be is a blessing, to live is holy.
Just to live is holy or something like that. Here's another nice one. This is from a 4th century BC Indian poet who lived in Calcutta. Her name was Amba Pali, and this is a translation from the Pali, P-A-L-I, that is. Black and glossy as a bee and curled was my hair. Now in old age it is just like hemp or bark cloth. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful. My hair clustered with flowers was like a box of sweet perfume. Now in old age it stinks like a rabbit's pelt. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful. Once my eyebrows were lovely as though drawn by an artist. Now in old age they are overhung with wrinkles. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful. Dark and long-lidded, my eyes were bright and flashing as jewels. Now in old age they are dulled and dim. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful. My voice was as sweet as the cuckoo's, who flies in the woodland thickets. Now in old age it is broken and stammering. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful. Once my hands were smooth and soft and bright with jewels and gold. Now in old age they twist like roots. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful. Once my body was lovely as polished gold. Now in old age it is covered all over with tiny wrinkles.
not otherwise, is the word of the truthful. Once my 2 feet were soft, as though filled with down. Now in old age they are cracked and wizened. Not otherwise, is the word of the truthful. Such was my body once. Now it is weary and tottering, the home of many ills, an old house with flaking plaster. Not otherwise, is the word of the truthful.
Paraphrase that last line.
People who tell the truth would not say anything else. This is the truth. That the repetition of that line was obviously traditional in English, in Indian poetry, or most likely traditional, just the repetition. And of course it was an oral culture, so it was useful to have sort of like a refrain. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful, but it's interesting this inventory that she does from head to toe.
It's not like the chorus is the whole story, the whole meaning of the whole poem.
Right, that's right. The chorus, the refrain, not otherwise, is the word of the truthful.
This is how it is.
This is just how it is. Yeah. Yep. I was beautiful and glossy and soft and shiny. And now I'm old and wrinkled and smell like rabbit pelt. And there's almost a kind of acceptance in the repetition of the line, isn't there? It's just a coming to terms with, a looking hard at and coming to terms with, and then singing.
What was the last chorus? The whole last verse?
Such was my body once. Now it is weary and tottering, the home of many ills, an old house with flaking plaster. Not otherwise is the word of the truthful.
In some ways, it could almost be a prayer with, like, so be it, or amen.
Yeah. Right. It's a real acceptance. It's a not without a sense of loss.
Yeah. What's important, I think, at any age is to make one's peace with one's knowledge or sense of mortality.
Mm-hmm.
What helped me was having cancer a couple of times.
Mm.
So you reconcile that. And as I just stated, my times are in thy hands.
Yeah.
It isn't up to me. I just read a statement, I think it was William Lyon Phelps, at age of 90. My body is falling apart bit by bit. He says, and frankly, I found it rather exhilarating.
Well, you know, you're the line that you used just preceding that, my time is in thy hands. I think is a really important expression of the opposite of that commercial culture's injunction to be beautiful, to be young, as though we could, you know, as though you could be young forever, and to remember that this is not something over which we have control, and thank God. You know, think what you would be if, under the influence of the Revlon company, you know, you could be whatever they managed to convince most people that we ought to be.
Only Elizabeth Taylor can do that.
Think about living forever.
Look at her.
Yeah. And think about what life would be like if all of us here in this room were 25 and looked alike.
Except that there's also a little bit there about feeling good about yourself. I don't mean buying into the full advertising.
Right.
But I mean that when you are old and actually your mental attitude also then has to do with your physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what we're saying is that's right, you accept it as you are, but there is something about the mental and emotional positive feeling about oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd hate to dwell on the wrinkles.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where my sense is. America does not value the spiritual. America values the physical. And when I say America, you know that I mean the dominant commercial culture.
Yeah.
And that to grow old with zest and wisdom has to mean letting go of America's image of the physical and creating communities in which it's possible to value wisdom, to value the spiritual, which is to say that you can feel good about yourself in lots of ways, I guess.
Yeah, in many ways.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody should.
Go ahead, Margaret.
I was just going to say that in response to the comment about coming to grips with your mortality and how
Piece with that. I just read a beautiful short story yesterday. I don't know who it's by. It was in a collection of O. Henry Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a story called The Singing Well, and it was about an old man and his granddaughter. And all along, you're sort of feeling sorry for the old man because there's something he can't remember, and the granddaughter's trying to help him remember it. And he finally goes back, and it's to a time when he was in the war, and he gets saved by hiding in a well, and a woman sits on top of that, and she sort of hides him and sings a song, and all that comes back, and the thing that is revealed to him when he finally remembers all of it is that at that moment, he wanted to grow old. He wanted to have his life. He'd only done half the things that he wanted to do. And so it's just this beautiful story. You're sort of feeling sorry for him all along, and then you realize that what a beautiful thing. And it was because he came to grips with his mortality and realized that he wanted to grow old.
Mm-hmm.
Just remind me of that.
Mm. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Beautiful story.
Yeah.
That's what they said. The alternative to growing old isn't very good.
And we lament for folks who die young. Somebody who is killed untimely in mm-hmm. some way, whether they're 13 or 25 or 47, mm-hmm. we say, oh, mm-hmm. what a shame.
And what a waste.
And what a waste, exactly.
And particularly if they die because of maybe their own bad habits.
Yeah. Let me give you one more poem. This is an American Indian poem. It's called Grandmother. The poet is Paula Gunn Allen. And she has a footnote here in which she says she's a member of the Oak Clan. So there's a reference to Oak in here. And you'll know that that's a reference to her being one of the Oak Clan. Out of her own body, she pushed silver thread, light, air, and carried it carefully on the dark, flying where nothing moved. Out of her body she extruded shining wire, life, and wove the light on the void. From beyond time, beyond oak trees and bright clear water flow, she was given the work of weaving the strands of her body, her pain, her vision into creation, and the gift of having created to disappear. After her, the women and the men weave blankets into tales of life, memories of light and ladders, infinity eyes and rain. After her, I sit on my laddered rain-bearing rug and mend the tear with string. It's a creation myth, and the creator is the grandmother who weaves creation out of her body. Let me read it to you again. It's grandmother. Out of her own body, she pushed silver thread, light, air, and carried it carefully on the dark, flying where nothing moved. Out of her body, she extruded shining wire, life, and wove the light on the void. From beyond time, beyond oak trees and bright clear water flow, she was given the work of weaving the strands of her body, her pain, her vision into creation, and the gift of having created to disappear. After her, the women and the men weave blankets into tales of life, memories of light and ladders, infinity eyes and rain. After her, I sit on my laddered rain-bearing rug and mend the tear with string. Isn't that lovely? Rich clearly wants you to linger over each of those images of the primordial grandmother, after whom everything else is just a little bit less.
Would you like to read the last couple lines again?
Sure. After her, the women and the men weave blankets into tales of life, memories of light and ladders, infinity eyes and rain. After her, I sit on my laddered, rain-bearing rug and mend the tear with string. There's almost a sense that the world has got older. That when the grandmother, she's in the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And after her, there were men and women who wove blankets.
Yeah, it's just copies.
Yeah. And now I sit on my laddered rain-bearing blanket and mend the tear with string.
There seem to be some images of like a spider and a web.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Spinning. Mm-hmm. And extruding wire.
Mm-hmm.
Extruding.
That comes from within.
Pardon?
Something that comes
That's
from
right.
within.
That's right. That all of...
Is the rain tears?
I don't know.
The torn? That's what I think that. The torn earth.
How are the tears spelled?
How are the what?
Is it tears or tears?
T-E-A-R.
T-E-A-R.
Could be either. Mm-hmm. Mend the tear is how I read it, but...
Yeah.
Where does, what does she identify as the location of the stuff that she's extruding? She said, does she say it comes from pain?
No. It says... There are two stanzas, each of which begins out of her own body.
But after that,
and then the third stanza says, from beyond time, beyond oak tree and bright clear water flow, she was given the work of weaving the strands of her body. So first she extrudes the strands, and then she's given the work, but she's given the work by some power. She was given the work of weaving the strands of her body, her pain, her vision.
That's where the pain came
from. Yeah. So she's weaving three things. The strands of her body and her pain and her vision into creation. And I think the grammar of this would suggest, and she was given the gift of having created to disappear. That her disappearance is the gift she was given, her ability to disappear, so that she created and then she sort of, I don't know, I want to have her go ascend, I guess. Mm-hmm. You see from my body that I want her to rise up. That's just me. And then after her, is the world is sort of wearing down a little bit. But she's the original creator.
But the granddaughter is still taking part.
But the granddaughter is still taking part.
It might be strange, but she's still moving through.
Right, she's still creating, she's mending. And mending is a kind of creation. The hour's up. I have to close. I also have to go clean my room and pack. So thank you all very much. It was very enjoyable.